Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
Well, welcome to Two Teas in a Pod again. Today we're going to talk about size, because it turns out, Jocelyn, size does matter in schools.
It really does in this case. And we're here with Kate Curcio. She is a speech and language pathologist at Darien High School. She's also the vice president of the Darien Education Association. And she knows a little bit about the impact of a caseload and class size and why it matters. So, Kate, if you could take a little bit of time to just explain what a caseload is and what that means for a service provider, whether it's a speech pathologist, special educator, or any other support provider in a school.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do that. But first, let me just say thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here and chat with you both. So as far as caseload is concerned, when we talk about the term caseload, we're talking about the number of students that I see in service on a regular basis for special education services. So whether it's myself as a speech language pathologist or a special education teacher, the students that we work with on a regular basis are the students that are on our caseload. And I think there's a lot of variance in what caseload sizes look like based on grade, based on, you know, what your job is, whether you're a special education teacher or a speech language pathologist or another related service provider such as an OT or a PT. But the number of students on your caseload impacts how you do your job and how you service your students on a daily basis.
Now, Kate, when you say servicing students, just for the people who out there, of our thousands of listeners who may not know what that means, is that something that happens every day? Does it happen every week, month, or how, what is the variation of that?
So students on my caseload and students on the caseload of a special education teacher or a related service provider are students who have qualified for special education services and have an IEP, an individualized education plan. And so their IEP indicates how often they're seen for a service, whether it's meeting with me for speech services or how often they're meeting with a special education teacher for special education services. So the number of hours that they meet with us is based on what's recommended on their individual education plan or their IEP.
So does that impact caseload? Does like your district say, oh, hey, this number of hours, so this particular service provider can only have a caseload of 20.
It can. I think depending on, you know, where you're working, I think some try to be cognizant of what those numbers look like and the number of hours, because I think it's really important to differentiate that. The number of students on your caseload, so if I say I have, I'm throwing out numbers here, say I have 35 kids on my caseload, that doesn't mean that I have 35 kids that I see 1 hour a week. Each kid has individualized hours. So sometimes I see kids once a week, sometimes I see kids twice a week, depending on the student and their level of need. Sometimes I see kids every day, sometimes I see kids every other day. So there's no real formula to what caseloads look like and how many hours you see students for. Recommendations for services are based on need. So it's different for every kid. And so no two caseloads will ever be exactly the same. And no two caseloads will ever mesh perfectly with each other.
So, Kate, I have a question, because when you say that you service students, you are talking about the face-to-face time and care that you give students, but that doesn't also include the time that you have to plan for them, evaluate need if there's an IEP coming up, or even those parent-teacher meetings and IEP meetings that are, you know, mandated by law. Those are part of that too, or is that not necessarily indicated on the service hours, but that does come with your caseload? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Within the field of speech language pathology and just within the field of special education, we talk a lot about caseload versus workload, right? So my caseload hours are the specific hours that I'm face-to-face working with students, providing them with speech-language therapy services. My workload is exactly what you said. On top of those face-to-face hours, the hours I spend every week planning and prepping my sessions, writing IEPs, planning for IEP meetings, evaluating students, writing reports based on those evaluations of the students. So a big part of my everyday work is my caseload, but a big part of my everyday work is also my workload and all of the paperwork and other components that go with, you know, providing students special education services.
It's not
always just the face-to-face.
Yeah, and it strikes me that you're in some capacity similar to like medical professionals.
Yeah.
Where you really do have to, not also, I mean, because in my experience, it's not just the paperwork for those meetings. It's, I have to log what I've, my experience was with this kid, their success. You know, sometimes you'll have Medicaid that you need to be reimbursed for, and that triggers a whole set of paperwork. So I think it is important as we look at the scope of the work of the people doing these jobs, we recognize that I think we'd all argue the most important component is the time you spend with the student. But in sometimes that's really not bearing the burden of your time. You have so much time that's spent on the cataloging and the processing. And like, if you were in a doctor's office, you'd probably have an assistant to do a lot of the paperwork that we're talking about. But in public schools, we expect the practitioner to execute the paperwork as well. So it's an interesting kind of layer, but it does beg the question of this. So as we talk about what do caseloads look like, and the challenge that you're really kind of expressing about how it is to kind of figure out and come up with an exact formula, the question is then, what's the right way to address this to ensure that we, you know, I've worked with SLPs who had 75 hours a week of work, and they probably could have had 90, and really trying to figure out, holy cow, we got this one in over their head. How do we get support? What are we going to do to rebalance? And I've found, particularly in small schools, where there's like one SLP and the workload varies from year to year based on student flux, this is really not an easy thing to balance, but I have to think there's a way. So what are your thoughts? If you could build it, what would you build?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's extremely difficult to balance, and it is a choreographed dance that I think all, you know, anybody who works with a caseload, a dance that they do at least on a yearly basis, if not more, because as service recommendations change and as, you know, kids qualify and you're adding more kids to your caseload, or as kids exit and are, you know, exited from your caseload, or new students move into town, or, you know, there's a list of factors that impact that. But you're constantly doing a dance to balance your schedule to get everybody in. And, you know, in a perfect world, I'd see every student individually for one-on-one individual service, but that's just not the reality of, you know, what it is to see students in, you know, in public education. So I group students, as I'm sure a lot of my colleagues do, into groups. And sometimes those groups are purposeful based on their areas of need and the goals on their IEP. But sometimes the groupings have to be just based on the student's schedules and my schedule. You know, I'm in a unique situation where being at the high school, I can only schedule students during a study hall or during a free period, because obviously we don't want them to miss their academic classes.
Right.
So I really become bound by my student's schedules and whatever period they have a study hall, or whenever they have a free period. I can't just pull them whenever it's convenient for the schedule I've created, or I can't even sometimes schedule them when I think like, oh, this kid and this kid are working on the same goals. They'd be really great in a group together. Let's put them together. Sometimes I can't, just because they have chemistry that period, or they have Algebra 1 that period. So it becomes a strategic choreographed dance to fit all of the Tetris pieces together to create a schedule that supports a caseload.
Obviously, if a school district had a significant number of service providers to balance that out, that would be helpful. That typically the understanding of how many kids are going to need services is not a true surprise to a district from year to year, correct? I mean, there will be needs that pop up.
I would think by high school, some of these students have been identified and you will have a little ebb and flow. I feel like there's some unpredictability maybe in elementary where we're starting to identify our kids who are emerging learners, and you can see a bump. But again, to Jocelyn's point, I kind of think that as a district, it's incumbent on you to have enough staff to be able to manage the ebb and flow. And, you know, my experience with service providers is they're pretty flexible individuals. So if you had to split your time between a building or two to make sure students got served, my understanding from service providers is that's kind of what they know to be the game, that you go where the work is, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think we have to make sure that those workloads are manageable, because as we kind of sit here and think, I am worried as I think about our service providers that it's so easy to say, well, just take one more, or just, can you just do these three more kids? Or I can't add a whole position because there's only eight kids, you know, that kind of language.
But I think it's true to say that, you know, Kate, how many students do you currently have on your caseload?
At the moment, I have 48.
So 48 kids on a caseload, they might not require 48 hours of services that week, but throughout their time, they're each going to require at least one IEP meeting. And so that is 48 hours of strict meeting time dedicated, at least,
That's the
dedicated. Layer. And so if you have a case, if you are a special education teacher or someone who whose schedule might look just a little bit different in terms of servicing, especially like an elementary school special education teacher, throughout their time, they're going to have to also go to those meetings.
Right.
And those meetings take away time from being with the students directly. And so I think that when districts are thinking about caseload, I'm not sure they always pay attention to all of the other responsibilities and how not only does that affect the teacher's workday and ability to provide quality care, but how that impacts the students' ability to have quality care from their teachers. Yeah. And so
And I've never been to an IEP meeting that was an hour. So I think that's an amazing estimation. And maybe you do it differently.
No.
But most of the ones I've been to are like 2 hours.
And I would ask just, you know, and just out of curiosity, Kate, 48 students, easy to manage or quite difficult?
It's a task. It's a task. And it's something I work at on a daily basis to manage. Something that I've been.
And while this is,
you know,
not,
I like that we use the word practice. Like I'm a practicing speech pathologist because I think I'm still practicing every day on how to fully manage all of that.
Fair.
Right.
And I will say, if you know, this is a podcast so people can't see you, but I will say that there's an extraordinary quantity of post-it notes around you that to try and, I'm assuming that's part of your management tools.
It is.
You know,
I
think keeping track of unique needs of 48 kids to try and support their progress, to becoming successful graduates, is an enormous task. And I think people don't often know what that means. So Kate, as a high school math teacher, I will schedule 5 classes and I will prep for 5 classes. Now I have lots of differentiation, but uniquely I have 5 classes, maybe 3 preps within that. So I'm doing algebra, geometry, algebra 2, and I'm prepping some differentiation involved. But you're really talking about 48 different preps. And I think that's the other thing I think people really need to conceptualize is, you know, I may see 100 students, you know, 120 in my 5 classes, but I can group plan in a way that allows me to make it efficient. But you're really looking at 48 unique set of needs and trying to figure out how to meet them.
Yep.
So when we talk about size and why it matters, you know, I get that there's not necessarily a silver bullet that would fix a problem that could say every case needs to be X, Y, or Z. But clearly, the narrower the spectrum so that teachers can focus and care for kids in very specific and thoughtful ways, less is more. And that in order for it to be manageable, districts really need to be mindful and to be able to provide significant resources to that endeavor, I think is kind of where we are with that.
And I think what you also speak to kind of speaks to education in general. You know, we're facing a time where clearly all the complexities of the world have sort of collapsed into schools. And what we're seeing is the smaller the class size, the easier we are able to kind of navigate those complex situations. It's easier for me as an educator to work with 15, 17 students and navigate complex things than it is for me to do that with 28. And so I think, absolutely. You know, this concept of that size matters, it really transcends and really speaks to all of education, and that so much can be accomplished. You know, I imagine you can think back to your ideal year, right? The year that you had just the right amount of kids with just the right amount, and how much you probably look back on that and go, I was able to do so much.
There was a point when I had half of the amount of students that I have now. And that year was a very successful year for me.
Well, and I imagine your students, and we're looking at Kate, who is in a district that is high performing and does, I will say, commit a significant amount of resources to student success and is happy to do so. So when we're looking at a caseload for a high school SLP at 45, you know, in a district like Darien that does commit significant resources, you know, I can't imagine what that might look like in another school district that might not be able to commit the same level of resources. And so I do know that Darien currently has two SLPs. I think they're looking to hire more to make sure that caseload does look better. But I'm not sure that all districts have that ability or that motivation. And so I think that when we want to pay attention to this, we highlight the fact that we're talking about caseloads matter no matter what district that you're in. And it's important that as a community of educators and legislators pay attention to the fact that we really need to make a commitment to supporting this work and making sure that caseloads and class size are manageable so that teachers can be successful with their students.
100%. And Kate, we thank you so much for staying with us today and talking about your experience and kind of allowing us to highlight the hard work that goes on with our service providers, because I think you guys often work in the wings and you probably never get lunch. So I hope today you get lunch or maybe this week sometime you'll get to have a lunch.
Sometime, eventually I'll get it. Thank you both for having me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. And listen, we'll have you back again sometime when your caseload comes down.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we really appreciate it. We look forward to having more conversations in the future. And if you haven't yet signed up, we have our new daily for CEA. So please make sure that you go right onto the CEA webpage and sign up and get your daily updates. And you will see that your two T's in a pod gets posted there as well. So we look forward to continuing the conversation about what's going on in schools.
Have a great week.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two T's in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two T's in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word, because we are
stronger together.